Thanks, Dave.
You told the story in part through the first-person account of one Danielle Don. It's too late for her. She's already decided to move on.
Right, and the big reason she's decided to move on is because she doesn't have the confidence that the system is going to get any better. So financially, where we're at right now is that just to get back to this year's levels of staffing and services, the district needs to get another $200 million.
Okay. Where's it coming from?
Well, the district's already counting on it, $120 million of it coming from the city's extension of the sales tax. But that right there is still way up in the air. It would still need to be approved by Harrisburg, if at all. And then also, the way that the city would like it, the way the council and the mayor would like it, that money would be split in half between the city pensions and the district. So it wouldn't be anywhere near close to $120 million. So then what else is up in the air? Well, we have a cigarette tax that was in Harrisburg that city council approved. State needs to give approval for that as well. They haven't done it yet.
A lot of ifs. Let's move on to the teacher's role in helping to close that shortfall.
Right. So then we look at all these other little moving pieces, and it all adds up to, well, that's not going to get us where we really need to go. And what all the powers that be seem to be coalescing around is the idea that the teachers need to give back in health care and salary concessions to the tune of about $100 million per year.
Doesn't sound like that sits very well with the teachers' union.
No, it doesn't at all. And as we heard in the story that you referenced at the top of the conversation, here's a teacher who's working, asked to work double the duty with double the responsibility. At the same time, she's being asked to take a 5 to 13% pay cut. It doesn't add up for a lot of teachers who feel like they've been going above and beyond given all the limited resources that we've seen in schools this year. So they've been fighting that tooth and nail, but you have Superintendent Height, now SRC Chair Bill Green, the governor, the mayor, all saying, no, the teachers union is the only people who haven't given back yet, and they need to be the ones to offer some more money on the table.
If it doesn't ultimately add up to the $200 million required, does the district risk shutting more schools and curtailing more services?
Well, they've said they're not going to close any more schools next year. We don't know if we can get any further in cutting services and staff. We're already at bare bones. But who knows? People didn't think it would get this bad, and it did. Where's that money going to come from? It's still a big question mark.
Is there any cause for optimism?
Well, we did see this week the city has four buyers for sites of real estate, and they think they're going to net $25 million from that deal. Sadly, they're already counting that money into their budget, so that's not going to help in this $200 million discussion.
Thanks, Kevin. Also, regarding real estate, we heard earlier this week about residents of Philadelphia Public Housing waiting years to be transferred to other units, even as the threat of domestic violence hung over their heads. Here's Community Legal Services housing attorney Rashida Phillips.
These people are being put into very dangerous situations where their life is at threat.
Joining me now with more is Holly Otterbein. Holly, you presented this story also in part through a first-person account.
Yes, I spoke with a woman. She said that she was being abused by her then-husband for several years when, in 2011, she asked the Philadelphia Housing Authority to move her to a different public housing unit. Just last week, she finally was offered a new place, she says. So that's more than 2 years that she had been waiting to be moved into a safer home.
And her story is not atypical. Remind us again about the startling relationship between the number of people on the waiting list and how many units actually become available.
Sure. So not just looking at domestic violence victims, but everyone in the city. There are more than 100,000 people on a waiting list for various forms of public housing in Philadelphia. Consider that only 400 units open up each year. So that makes it really hard for the Philadelphia Housing Authority to move people like this woman that I talked to and other women that I talked to in similar situations.
Holly, your first-person account touched on the threat of physical harm. Let's broaden the conversation to the potential for financial abuse.
Sure. So in domestic violence situations, what you sometimes see is abusers employing financial abuse, which means that they may assault their partner before a job interview or an important meeting, or they may just not allow them to seek employment altogether.
Various forms of sabotage.
Exactly. And so what that means is that some of these women who are in public housing and who are in poverty may be in those situations as a direct result of their abuse.
To what extent is this problem on the radar of municipal government?
Well, I was just told today that City Councilwoman Cindy Bass is seeking hearings on the problems that I uncovered. There's not a specific date yet, but a spokesman for Bass said that they are going to try to seek solutions to the problem. So it's not adversarial. They don't want to point fingers, but they want to figure out a way to move abused families much more quickly than the Philadelphia Housing Authority is now.
And at least at the onset, by shedding light on the scope of the problem.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
WHYY's Holly Otterbein on Reporters Roundtable.